Welcome to Double Take with Matt and Jake. This is Jake, as always, joined by Matt. You know, just hanging out, talking some football today. We're going to talk MLS soccer, some Clemson football. Matt, any updates? Oh, this is pretty much the only time we talk. Like, we text, but this is like the only time we like actually talk.
Yeah, nothing I can think of. I told but the listeners don't know this, so I got a job to teach high school English for the next school year. So, yes, I graduated in English, so I feel like I've got that part down pretty good. I did not graduate in English teaching, so I don't feel like I really know how to teach. So we're just going to kind of wing it.
Should be fun.
Yeah.
Should be enjoyable.
Should be good. But, yeah, the Royals, the women's soccer team that we've got to playing well, we may talk about them if we've got a little bit of time, so that's always fun to see.
Yeah, you know, great precursor, but there wasn't a lot going on in sports this week.
Yeah, I know, like, there's the NBA playoffs that are going on, but those are just, I don't know, when the Jazz aren't in, there's not a ton that really pulls me into the NBA playoffs until we get to the finals. I think that the Sixers-Raptors series has probably been the most interesting, but I don't know. I don't particularly like either of those teams, and I dislike the Sixers, so.
Yeah, I don't know. I think right now the Denver, Portland, and the Boston, Milwaukee series are the better of the two, mostly because I don't have to watch James Simmons or Ben Simmons or James Harden play in those two series.
Right. Yes, that definitely helps.
Yeah. Well, Matt, let's get into it. So here's why we're talking about Clemson football in May. So on Sunday, May 5th, they got a commitment from the number one quarterback in the country. His name is DJ. I'm going to butcher his last name. Uigalele. Something to that effect. He's from St. John Bosco High School in California. It was between Clemson and Oregon. And with that commitment, Clemson has – this is May, remember. They have 4 5-star commits. They have 14 commits total. All of them are 4 or 5 stars. And they have the top 3 defensive tackles in the country committed to them.
That is pretty nuts. Yeah, because I knew, like, it felt like, you know, the quarterbacks and a few other positions might start to favor Alabama, to favor Clemson over Alabama, but the 3 defensive tackles, I mean, that to me is a shocker.
Yeah, the top 3 defensive tackles in the country going to Clemson. And the reason it's big that they got DJ, the number one quarterback in the country, is because, so next year, he'll be a senior in high school. Trevor Lawrence will be a sophomore. The year after that, in 2020, DJ will be a freshman. Trevor will be a junior. So DJ will probably redshirt. And he'll even ideally be featured in some games because they can play up to 4 games now.
Oh, so yeah, that's a good rule, by the way. But
yeah, no, I'm a fan of it for sure. So Clemson's going to go from having Deshaun Watson to, again, Kelly Bryant, who's, I like, but he's the worst out of these quarterbacks for sure. But he's, I thought, a good quarterback. But they got Deshaun Watson, Trevor Lawrence, who is the best quarterback in his class. Some think he's the best quarterback in the country right now. And then they got the number one quarterback in the 2020 class. And this kid's good. I was watching his film earlier today. He's going to play football for sure. He could play baseball as well. He can throw a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. And he reminded me of, like, an athletic Jameis Winston, if that makes sense, just throwing mechanics. I haven't gotten a whole lot into his film or anything like that.
Right.
And really just – he plays like a baseball player. Like, quarterbacks who play baseball, you can kind of tell the way they throw. So he's a crazy good athlete. He's got a lot of room for improvement, as good as he is, just because, like, some of the mechanics, you know, it's a little bit of a longer release, things like that. So – Clemson's going to be around for a while. And my question to you, Matt, is I have an answer for this, but we haven't really talked about it. I've heard some people saying Clemson has dethroned Alabama, especially with the DJ commitment. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I'm not ready to say they've dethroned them. I think that they've dethroned them in the sense that it's not just Alabama anymore. I'm not totally sure that Clemson is sitting on the throne, if that makes sense. I think that it's going that way, you know. Because recruits certainly aren't everything. We've seen that the team that gets the best recruits don't always necessarily win the national title. Case in point, when Clemson beats Alabama. But, you know, it does seem like if they keep on recruiting like this and they continue to beat Alabama in recruiting, then I don't think they're going to have as firm of a grasp on it as Alabama ever did, just because I think Alabama is still going to be around. I still think we're going to see them in the national title game probably 2 out of 3 years over and over again. But yeah, no, I think if they win the national championship this year, then they're officially the better program.
Yeah, I well, really, it's going to come down to Clemson and Alabama. You know, like, unfortunately, four teams have to make the playoffs, so there's going to be two other teams. And if there's something funky, like 2 years ago where, like, Alabama loses the Iron Bowl, they could play in the semifinals. But the winner of the Clemson-Bama game is going to win the national championship next year, for sure. And we talk about how good Clemson recruiting class is, which it is. Alabama's third right now, so it's not like they're slouching. And last year they had one of the best recruiting classes ever of all time. So Alabama and Clemson, I think they're neck and neck. They're the top two programs for sure. So when you said like Clemson's dethroned them in the sense that they're not on the top by themselves, that's true. I'm on board with that. I agree with that. But I don't think Clemson's overtaken Alabama yet.
Yeah, I agree with that. And what you said is interesting, that last year they had maybe the best recruiting class ever. I think that that's important to remember, because I think the kids coming in the year after the best recruiting class ever might not be as excited to go to Alabama as they would be. Like this quarterback going to Clemson, he's got Trevor Lawrence in front of him, but he knows that he's probably going to be ahead of those people who are 1 or 2 years older than he is. So he's got more of a clear path to a starting job. And I still think that that's important to kids, even if they're the top recruits in the country. So I think that you're going to start to see a little bit of back and forth. And I think Alabama is going to continue to have number one recruiting classes.
Yeah. You know, and this is something interesting. This is LSU specific, but just in reference, like, these top programs and like how big recruiting is. We always talk about in college football how, you know, the more seniors you have on your team, the better, really any college sport. But one thing, I was reading an article last year about LSU football and their struggles, how they haven't been as good as LSU fan base would like them to be. And one of the things, the person, I forgot who wrote the article, I had mentioned it because it's literally like a year ago, but it just has to do with, you know, recruiting and how it affects college football, especially these big programs. And they talked about the number of seniors that LSU had going into the draft the last several years. And, you know, right off the bat, I was like, oh, that's good. Like, they have all these seniors that are draft eligible. But the author then made the point, you know, at LSU, why weren't they good enough to go to the NFL as juniors or like redshirt sophomores? Mm-hmm. Yeah. We made the point that at these big programs, like, the more seniors you have, that means they weren't good enough to go to the NFL. That's a, you know, a blanket statement, but that he attributed that to the development at LSU. But bigger picture wise, like, with these schools, they kind of want the players out the door, just like at Duke with Mike Krzyzewski in basketball. They don't want you there. Like, they want to get the next person.
Right.
Like, if you're not good enough to go to the NBA, then, like, you're not as good as the next guy coming in the door.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the rules with when you're allowed to enter the draft for NFL and college basketball do affect this, because I think that, you know, you've got the really, really best players going to the NBA after their freshman year. And so you have these guys who are freshmen, and then you don't really have anybody in that talent level, and so it allows the seniors to have a bigger difference. But like with college football, your top guys aren't going to the NFL until they're juniors, and so a junior at Alabama who's the number one recruit is going to be better than a senior at LSU. And even though the senior has more experience, the junior is still going to have enough experience where the talent is going to vastly overshadow that.
Yeah, so no, exactly right. So it's still early in this recruiting process, but they have six top 50 players already in early May. So Clemson's recruiting class is gonna be incredible. And and they're here to stay. Let me, you know, while we're on the subject, Matt, we didn't prep for this at all. Who do you think the most likely teams, we're both assuming Alabama and Clemson make it, going into next year, you know, just finished spring football. We really got nothing going on football-wise. Who do you think is most likely, if you had to bet, to make the college football playoff next year along with Clemson and Alabama?
I would say, without having done a whole lot of research and just kind of remembering, I'm going to say... So who made it last year besides Clemson and Alabama? Was it Oklahoma and was Georgia the other team, or was it Ohio State?
It was Notre Dame.
That's right. It was Notre Dame.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to say Notre Dame, Alabama played Oklahoma.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm going to say Clemson and Alabama. Oklahoma, I'm going to say, is not going to make it. I think, you know, the drop off from Baker Mayfield to Kyler Murray allowed them to still go. I don't think Jalen Hurts is as good as either of those two quarterbacks. Georgia, I just think it's going to be hard with them being in the same conference as Alabama. There's going to be a bunch of weird stuff that happens. So I'm going to say, and Ohio State, has Urban Meyer retired yet, or is he going to retire?
He's retired. I mean, if he unretires, it'll be to coach at either USC or Notre Dame in a year or two.
Right.
But Ryan Day, who was the interim coach for the first three games last year, the offensive coordinator, he's the head coach. And then, not to point you in any direction, but they got that Georgia transfer, Justin Fields, who I think was he was in the same recruiting class as Trevor Lawrence. I think Justin Fields was better than Trevor Lawrence coming out of high school.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Well, I'm not going to say Ohio State just because, you know, I think Urban Meyer really is valuable. I think we look at these teams that go over and over again. You know, it's got Nick Saban, Dabo Sweeney, Urban Meyer. And then even Oklahoma for years and years and years had Bob Stoops. And I think that helps. So I think that, you know, changing the head coach, even though you're probably going to keep most of the same systems, is going to hurt them. So I'm going to go with Michigan as the third team.
Michigan.
I'm going to say Michigan. Yeah, I mean, because I think they're going to be the best non-Ohio State team in the conference next year. And I think the Big Ten's going to end up getting somebody. And let's say Washington. I feel like it's high time Washington gets in. The Pac-12 hasn't had anybody for a few years. I'm going Washington.
Interesting. Okay. You know, I like Washington. Here's the thing. This has to do with Washington and Georgia and Ohio State, really. So this week, last week, I guess, at work, I watched a lot of Jake Fromm film because I've never been a Jake Fromm fan. I've always thought, you know, he's the worst quarterback on the roster. And somehow he beat out Jacob Eason and Justin Fields, which, you know, kudos to Fromm. So I was watching him. He has some really good throws. It's better than I thought he was, but also at the same time, it confirmed exactly what I thought. You know, one read guy, doesn't think through a lot. I never really saw him. I didn't watch like every game, so I'm not like an expert, but the games I watched, I was never like, oh, you know, he went through those progressions. Like, in all the throws he did make, I was like, you know, that's a really good throw, but also you're expected to make that throw, whether it be like, you know, a fade to the end zone or like a dig across the middle, like whatever throw he's making, I was like, oh, that's really impressive. But watching back, like, you know, he should make that throw as an easy read, is a one read kind of guy. And that's an oversimplification of it. But Jacob Eason, who transferred to Washington, he's from Washington. He was a starter 2 years ago when Georgia went to the college football playoff. Jacob Eason started the first game, got hurt. Jake Fromm stepped in. And then, you know, Georgia's undefeated. So they let Jake Fromm keep that job. And that's why Jacob Eason ended up transferring. And then last year, Justin Fields was a freshman. Again, number one or two player in the country. Last year was interesting because, you know, DJ, the quarterback we were talking about for Clemson, he's the number one quarterback. He's the number 13 overall player in the country. Mm-hmm. In the class before that, two quarterbacks were number one and number two, overall players, Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. You know, different places have them ranked differently, but it was the first time in a long time that two quarterbacks had the top two spots.
Right.
So Justin Fields comes into Georgia. He doesn't really play. He, Kirby Smart, Georgia's head coach, tries to play him sparingly enough where, like, you know, not to threaten Jake Fromm, but keep Justin Fields happy. Ultimately, he ends up transferring to Ohio State. And good for Jake Fromm, man. Like, no matter what I think, good for him beating both those guys out and making them transfer.
Yeah, I mean, that's – and it's really not something you see in college football. Usually the higher recruited guy ends up getting the starting job. It's really hard to kind of go against, you know, really probably the promises the coaches make to these players. So yeah, good for him. That's impressive.
Yeah. So, yeah, but I think – I like your Washington pick. It's going to be interesting because the Pac-12, I think, is the most competitive in terms of top to bottom. Really, except Oregon State, you could really lose to anybody any week.
Right.
And that's why I think Washington hasn't made the playoff or any Pac-12 team in the last couple of years. In the North, it's going to be Washington and Oregon. A lot of people are higher on Oregon because they have Justin Herbert coming back, where Wash Jacob Eason hasn't started a full season, even though he's a highly touted prospect. And in the South, there's really, you know, it's pretty wide open. It's Utah. A lot of people really like Utah in the South. That's the only Pac-12 South team that's getting top 25 votes early in the preseason. They've been anywhere from 10 to 16 is what I've seen them at. I think Arizona State's going to be really good. Their problem is all three of their quarterbacks are going to be true freshmen. Mm-hmm. They're all highly rated, so I think they can be good. But Arizona State's going to be really good. USC, I don't think people are – I think people are doubting them, which is weird because they're USC. But here's what I'm looking at when I look at USC and why I think they'll be good in the South. And, Matt, this is kind of extrapolating off of your comment, so I'm rambling at this point. I apologize.
That's good.
But here's the thing with USC. So they got JT Daniels. So he reclassified. So he's going to be a sophomore. This should be his freshman year of college. He was a senior. He skipped his senior year of high school. So he's going to be good. But he was the number one quarterback in his class, which was in between Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence class, and then this DJ class. They're also bringing in Graham Harrell. As we all know, Cliff Kingsbury got fired at Texas Tech as the head coach. Got the offensive coordinator job at USC for like 3 weeks, 2 weeks maybe, and then took the head coaching job at Arizona or in the NFL. So Graham Harrell, he's the quarterback who beat Colt McCoy on that pass to Michael Crabtree in 2007, that Texas Tech game on Halloween, the blackout in Lubbock. You remember that, Matt? We were watching it in Dylan's basement.
I do remember that.
That was Graham Harrell. So he was coaching in North Texas, who had one of the most prolific offenses in the country last year. I think, you know, the closest thing we've seen to that is Rich Rodriguez in Arizona, and that was really a run spread offense. You know, there are some spread offenses in the Pac-12, and there's the air raid at Washington State, but it's not really – no, I guess it actually is like Washington State. So it's going to be – but imagine what Washington State is running, a similar to that, because Graham Harrell played under Mike Leach at Texas Tech. So it's a very similar offense to that, but with USC's players. You know, Gardner Minshew, Washington State's quarterback, he was an East Carolina transfer, and he led the nation in passing, or top five in passing. Think what they can do with USC's talent pool of receivers and JT Daniels at quarterback.
Right, because their talent pool has not dropped as much as you would think it is. Like, they're still getting a ton of really good recruits.
No, they're USC. There should be no reason. I think they had the third or fourth best recruiting class in the Pac-12 this year, and it was a huge disappointment. There's no reason. USC, more than any other conference, they haven't done it on the field, so I'm not saying they're like doing this on the field, but more than any other conference, that's the program, USC. And the SEC, Alabama is obviously the best on the field, but they got Georgia, Florida, LSU, Auburn, and that's why they have Kentucky. There's so many like talented programs there. In the Big Ten, Ohio State, Michigan. In the ACC, there's Clemson, Florida State, Miami. There's a lot of – in the Big 12, Oklahoma, Texas are the top teams. In the Pac-12, there's nobody close to USC.
Right, yeah. And then, like, just like you said, you're not talking about on-field production. You're talking about expectation, historical excellence, you know, the way that we sort of regard that program and revere that program. Like, there's not there's not a lot of other blue bloods of college football that are in the Pac-12.
Right. So I think USC is going to win the South, but I think Washington, I think they can be good. So I like that pick of who's going to make it. I think Georgia, you didn't think Georgia is going to make it. And I think I agree with you just because you look at what happened last year. For Georgia to make it, you need crap to happen. Like Alabama losing and not making it to the SEC championship. So you have a shot at winning the SEC championship, which happened 2 years ago. That's how Georgia got in. The other thing you need to happen is you need the Pac-12, Big 12. I think if Notre Dame didn't have two losses, then Georgia would have got in over Ohio State last year. But you remember Ohio State last year, they only had one loss, and it was a blowout to Purdue. So it wasn't a good loss, but they still only had one loss. So even if Notre Dame doesn't have the year they do, it's not a lock that Georgia gets in.
Yeah, and that's really the problem. I think that they're going to be in the top four talent-wise in the way that they play. I just think the way that the selection committee works, they place so much value on winning your conference that it's really just going to be almost impossible for things to fall their way.
Yeah, they'd be my number three team talent-wise, but I'm not picking them right now to get in the playoff for all the reasons we talked about. I think Ohio State's going to get in. And the reason why, it has to do everything with Justin Fields. You know, in Ohio State's spring game, he wasn't extremely smooth, but he'd only been on campus for a couple months. They have a pretty complicated offense at Ohio State that they run with Ryan Day. So I'm not worried about that. I think Ohio State's problem the last couple years, remember 2 years ago, was interesting. Remember the year they got in and they got blown out by Clemson and they didn't win their conference? They lost to Penn State. Penn State won the Big Ten, but Ohio State got in?
Yeah.
And then the year after that, they got killed by Iowa. Alabama didn't win their conference, but Alabama got in instead of Ohio State. And all the Ohio State fans were complaining that, oh, we won our conference. And literally everyone was like, well, what about Penn State the year before? You know what I mean? So Ohio State, they've benefited and not benefited from the same situation, just being on the other side of it. But they got blown out by Iowa. And then last year, they got rocked by Purdue. And the thing, I think it was Ryan Russillo who articulated this, an ESPN guy. But when you're comparing teams, like who's better, no matter what you're doing the other games, I can't picture Alabama losing by 30 to Purdue.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So in a lot of ways, what I think the committee's looking for is like at their worst. No matter how many blowouts you have, what's the worst you've done? And for Ohio State, that's losing to Purdue by 30. That's not good enough. So if they can go through a season without getting blown out by Indiana or something like that, I think they're going to get in. Because it's not enough to just have one loss and win your conference. The loss needs to be like a close game to Michigan State or something like that. Not losing to Maryland.
Right, yeah. No, I agree. I think, yeah, they can't have any more of those losses, but I think they understand that now just because it happened to them so recently. So I think in all of those games are going to be really energized. And so I don't think that's what they need to worry about. I think that their loss might come to, you know, some of these bigger, more formidable opponents.
Yeah. And, you know, for the fourth team, I don't know. I want to say Washington. I think they're going to be the best team in the Pac-12 again, but I think the Pac-12 is so competitive, I'm nervous about picking any Pac-12 team, which leads me to Texas or Oklahoma. And the problem with those two schools, last year Oklahoma got in. They lost to Texas in the Red River rivalry. Man, I really had the hiccups. I apologize. So they lost to Texas in that game, and then they beat Texas in the Big 12 championship. But what if they lose that game? What if they switch? What if they go undefeated, beat Texas in the first game, then lose in the Big 12 championship? Or what if West Virginia would have beaten Oklahoma, and then West Virginia plays Oklahoma in the Big 12 championship again? Oklahoma wins, but they have two losses now. Like, there's so many. The Big 12 championship, the way it's set up, where you play every team twice, it's hard to do that. You know what I mean? I think Oklahoma's way to get in is what they did lose and then beat the team you lost to in the Big 12 championship. I think they just have such a specific way to get into the playoff now, the way the Big 12s, or beat the same team twice. Like a couple years ago, they beat with Baker Mayfield when they went. they beat TCU twice, you know, and that works perfectly as well. But I think their margin for error is so specific because, like, I think it's because they beat the team they lost to, where they would have beaten like West Virginia twice is where they had an issue or where they got in. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. It is weird. I mean, I feel like the winner of the SEC is going to get in automatically. The way that Clemson's played, that makes you think that the winner of the ACC is going to get in automatically, because for somebody to not be Clemson who gets in, they have to beat Clemson, so they'd have to be phenomenal. The Big Ten, I feel like they're going to get in almost every year. So, I mean, clearly the two conferences that have had the hardest time and that are going to have the hardest time are the Pac-12 and the Big Ten. What's weird about it is the Pac-12 is their too good for their own good. Like you've talked about, that from top to bottom, they're the hardest conference. It's impossible to go through a season of the Pac-12 without losing one game, if not two or three. The Big Ten, it's just kind of their own fault for the way that they've, you know, the way that they've structured themselves and adding that conference championship onto the end. And you just really think that if they added two teams, and this isn't even a BYU thing, like even if they just added like two, you know, not really good football programs, like, I don't know, Temple and Memphis or something, that they'd be better off because they wouldn't run into this problem.
Yeah, the interesting thing with the Big Ten scheduling is Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, and Penn State are all in the same division. So they're all beating up on each other. And it's basically Wisconsin and a bunch of farm schools on the other side. So, like, Iowa's good. Northwestern last year was good. But Northwestern was a four-loss team playing in the conference championship. So when Ohio State's playing Northwestern, Oklahoma was playing Texas. And it was really between Oklahoma, Ohio State, and Georgia for that last spot once Notre Dame went undefeated. So Oklahoma's playing Texas. Oh, Georgia lost their game to Alabama, or they would have gotten in. Ohio State's playing Northwestern. That last, the way it's set up, and I don't know what the Big Ten can do about it, because you can't, like, they did it geographically, but it just happens, like, all those schools in the West Division, again, Iowa, Northwestern, and Wisconsin. And Wisconsin's normally pretty good. They had a down year last year, but you can't just bank on Wisconsin being top 15 to get the other team from the other division into the national championship every year.
Yeah, no, it is. And like you said, it's weird because you can't, I don't know, like, what are you going to do? Like, put Michigan and Michigan State in different divisions?
Yeah, they, like, can't, like, geographically, it's just how it worked out. It just sucks, you know, for the Big Ten, like, their scheduling thing. The ACC is interesting because there are two divisions similar to the Big Ten, but theirs isn't geographic, just like kind of how it worked out. So they have the Atlantic Division. So that's Clemson, Florida State, and Louisville. Normally those three are really good. Not so much recently, but there's also North Carolina State, Boston College. Pretty good division. The other division, and I write for North Carolina, so like I follow this closer than I would otherwise, but there's North Carolina, Duke, Virginia, Virginia Tech, Miami. It's just like a clown show. Like, every team beats each other. Like, it's like the Pac-12, but like just a step or two below that in terms of competitiveness. Like, last year, Pitt went to the ACC championship just because somebody had to go.
Yeah.
In that division. So I think if someone besides Clemson made it to the, I think for, let's say hypothetically, I don't think this will happen in any team, Clemson's division, but I think it would have to be a team like Louisville or North Carolina State or Florida State that beats Clemson. Clemson doesn't go to the ACC championship. The other team does. I think Clemson would be more likely to get in than Georgia. Similar to Alabama a couple years ago, didn't play in the ACC or didn't play in the conference championship, still got in. I think it's better for teams, if you're going to have a loss, to have it not be the conference championship, to have it be before the conference championship, so you can't lose in the conference championship and make a bad impression going into the playoff.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that, I think that it is, you know, it's valuable in the sense that, like, the teams who are playing well at the end of the season, those are the ones that you want to get in. But it does make for some weird situations, like who you lost to, when, like, Georgia losing to Alabama in the conference championship in the last game, like, that loss is more of a problem than somebody who loses to, like, Stanford at the beginning of the season or something.
Yeah. Well, do you remember that 1 year Stanford didn't make the playoff and because they, like, had a loss to Northwestern and, like, the kickoff was, like, 9 a.m. Pacific time and it was the first game of the year?
Yeah, I do remember that. That was weird.
Weird stuff in college football. Yeah. Cool. Well, that was more football talk than we thought. It mostly was going to be about Clemson, but that was a nice little in-depth preview of some college football from those power conferences. Let's. We got about 10 minutes left, Matt. Let's talk about some soccer real quick, some MLS soccer, to be specific. So let's start with the Western Conference and then do a little bit in the East. My cat is crying like crazy, so I do apologize for that. Let's start with, Matt, let's start with Real Salt Lake because, you know, we're from Salt Lake, so that's the team we follow the most. But I want to talk about Real Salt Lake and the Los Angeles Galaxy more than any other of the two teams right now.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So Real Salt Lake, they are in 8th place. 7 teams are going to make the playoffs this year. They're changing the playoff format this year, so I'm not totally sure, you know, what's a play-in game and who has to do what and everything. So that's going to be interesting to see. But anyway, so they are close. They're only 1 point off of the 8th spot. And Real's a team that tends to do well at the second half of the year. In the second half of the year. So the fact that they're close right now and not in like 11th or 12th and have to fight their way all the way into one of those bottom seeds for me is really encouraging. What I am concerned about, we've been trying to get a forward on the team, really like a number 11 for several years. It appears we finally got this guy. His name's Sam Johnson. I believe he's from Liberia, but he's coming. His previous team was on Portugal, and he's been playing well. But Jake, I want you to listen to, I'm not going to read the whole quote, but just part of this quote, and you let me know how concerned you are as a fan, okay?
Shoot.
Okay. So this is Sam Johnson after we lost to Portland. I'm not really feeling happy. After I scored, of course it's okay, but I'm not feeling happy. I have to express myself now. I'm just doing a run around for these guys. Even when training, it's difficult for me to get the ball from them. They can see that I'm running around, and very often I don't get the ball. I'm just running around on the field. They have to trust me. I'm a player on the team. They have to trust me. I'm a striker for them. Unfortunately, we lost. I'm not happy about it, but I think scoring is good.
You know what that sounds like to me?
Yeah.
It sounds like Will Smith doesn't think he's getting the ball enough at Bel Air Academy.
I would like to think that we don't have a bunch of Carltons running around the field, but I get what you mean.
I mean, it sounds like he thinks, I'm not even saying this is right or wrong, but just the vibe I got from that quote is not right or wrong. This is just like the vibe I got from the quote. Like, he thinks he's better than everyone else and he's not getting the opportunity he thinks he deserves to showcase that.
Yeah.
Which is frustrating. As someone who played JV football, you know, I know exactly how he feels.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's some truth to what he's saying. Like, there's been times when we've missed him and not got on the ball quite when we want to, but he's only played, you know, like two or three games. Whenever you get a new player onto the team, it's always going to be hard to get them the ball just because you don't he is from Liberia, so that I was right about that. But you know, it's just you need to learn how they're taking their runs, where they're going to be, how fast they are, all these little things. You just need to develop that chemistry, and I don't think that they quite have that yet. And so I do think it's going to be better. I'll tell you what though, if he goes 2 or 3 games without scoring, then, I mean, you really have to be concerned about him requesting a transfer in the July-August transfer window if that happens. And that would be a huge problem.
I think something interesting about MLS, I think MLS might be the most unique league in any sport in the world. And the reason why is because there's every team has such a different way of developing players where, you know, even the English Premier League, you know, the top team, it's the same where like, you got your academy, you got your homegrown players, and also you're buying players. But in the MLS, because of the salary cap, which is, from my understanding, the only league in soccer that has a salary cap where there's a limit on how much you can spend, you're only getting, they're called three designated players where the salary cap doesn't count against you. So those players, they come in, and again, this isn't like right or wrong, but they come in thinking, you know, I'm the guy on this team. Like, they're paying me all this money, not counting on the salary cap. Like, I'm the man. I shouldn't deserve the ball or the attention, whatever. Where really, a lot of times that's not the case, especially for smaller teams like Real Salt Lake. I think Colorado's the same way, Sporting Kansas City to an extent. They bring these players in because they can, but they already have these academies set up and these homegrown players where even if they're getting paid more and are designated more than some of the American or the homegrown players, they're not necessarily getting the role that matches their paycheck. And I think designated players around the league have been frustrated by that.
Right, yeah, and it's weird because, and the way it works out is those players do end up being much better than a lot of the other players on the MLS teams, not necessarily everybody else. For example, I'm not sure that Sam Johnson and Albert Rusnak are leaps and bounds ahead of what Nick Raimondo or Kyle Beckerman were in their heydays, or even Javier Morales. I would think that he in his prime would have been as good as, you know, some of these other players. And I think, you know, like Demir Krylock is not a designated player. And I think he's right up there with Rusnak. But it's weird because they all do end up being much better players than the average player. But it's still the game of soccer. And, you know, at least on our team, these guys all end up being forwards. And so for the ball to get to the forwards, it has to move through all these other guys. And in a possession-based game, the ball spends more time in the midfield and with the defenders than it does with the forwards a lot of the time. So it's like a receiver, you know, the best receivers only catch the ball 4 to 8 times a game.
Yeah, and so, like 10 receptions in a football game. So that's a big day for you.
Right, yeah. So it is. So I guess what I'm saying is I do understand the frustration. I'm very concerned that he's this frustrated this quickly. I mean, with, you know, the 2 or 3 games that he's played, that he's not giving his teammates more of a chance, I think is really concerning.
Yeah. Well, let's more MLS drama. Yeah, this is, you know, we love the NBA for dramas. The MLS has its fair share. So a couple weeks ago, Zlatan Ibrahimovic and the Los Angeles Galaxy beat Real Salt Lake. So Real Salt Lake's involved again, but this is more Zlatan. 2-1, and Zlatan scored a goal to go up 2-1. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, Matt. And then afterwards, he was trash-talking Real Salt Lake center back the entire time. And it was not like regular trash talk. It was like abusive trash talk. So then he came in unprompted, uninvited, from my understanding, to Real Salt Lake's locker room to quote-unquote apologize. And from what I've heard, it sounds like he was just trying to trash talk more. But he came in
right.
Apologize, quote again, quote with parentheses on that. And the Real Salt Lake defender, I saw him, like, he tried to get in Zlatan's face. Like, a fight almost broke out. It wasn't like 10 out of 10 almost broke out, but like, if no one stops him, they're throwing fists from what I saw. And there's no punishment for Zlatan for doing that. Just going in, first of all, the trash talk's one thing. Like, he's just a cocky person and he's extremely talented. So no harm there. But going into another team's locker room in any sport, the only thing I can think of it is like the Rockets Clippers thing a year or two ago with the secret tunnelway under the Staples Center with Chris Paul. You remember that?
Yeah.
That's the only other thing I can think of that's like close to that.
It's the only thing that I've heard of, although I'm sure that there are, you know, similar situations that people could bring up to our attention. But yeah, so just to be clear, on the field, Zlatan, among other things, according to the RSL center back, whose name is Nedum Onuaha or something similar to that. So he says that Zlatan said to him on the field, "I'm going to hurt you. There's enough time in this game left that I'm going to hurt you. And then when he came into the locker room, he said, did you calm down yet, big guy, or something like that. So clearly not really an apology, and not saying I'm not going to hurt you. That's not trash talk. That's threatening somebody. And so again, no punishment, because he's Zlatan. And you know, he is a big personality, and like, that was one of, RSL's complaints, is that he's supposed to be the face of the league. And if you're the face of the league, you shouldn't be treating other players like that. Like, that just can't happen, and it wouldn't be happening in any other league.
I agree. Yeah. And I think if it was like 97% of any other player, maybe Carlos Vela doesn't get penalty, but really anyone else, I think, is going to get some sort of punishment in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm very, very surprised that that wasn't as big of a deal.
Yeah. Well, that's our soccer drama. Matt, any more drama before we sign off?
Not really any drama. I think those are the really interesting things. Just as far as the MLS as a whole, it is interesting to see. Right now, LAFC looks really good, and they, you know, might be a pick to do what Atlanta United did last year, where, you know, in their first year, they're really, really talented, but they need to go through the playoffs one time and get eliminated before they can go on and win the whole thing. This is their second year. I think they're probably the most talented team in the league right now. And I think with last year getting bumped by Real Salt Lake in the playoffs, I think that gives them the experience they need to go on and win the MLS Cup. So they're my early season pick.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they look really, really, really good right now. So for all your soccer drama, all your college football recruiting takes, really whatever you're looking for, you came to the right spot. So Double Take with Matt and Jake. It's on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Audioboom. Subscribe, 5-star review, pour for more. 5 stars only. Twitter and Instagram's at MJ Double Take. Appreciate everybody listening, all the support, and we'll talk to y'all next week.